afternoon, I'm a first year PhD researcher at the Center for Drawing. The working title of my research, practice-based research, is the semantics of small delay attention as geometric mean between the existent and the real. As my research, is this on the mic? On that. As my research is very much centered on one single person, just say about the biography of Simone Weil, for those that don't know that one. So Weil was a French philosopher. She was born in Paris in 1909 and died in Ashford, Kent, in 1943. She briefly taught philosophy in Greek at various lycées around France, and her major philosophical interests were Greek thought, history, philosophy, science, particularly geometry, mathematics, and in her last years, religion. She was very politically and socially engaged. This, for instance, is Weil's identity card while she was working at the Renault factory, where she worked as part of a study of the conditions of workers at the time. She was also involved in setting up classes for people that don't really have access to education. These classes are the WEA, the Work Educational Association, here in England, would be a descendant of that sort of operation. She also participated in the Spanish Civil War, and during the Second World War, she drafted a plan which was never realized for the mobilization of a group of frontline nurses. Everybody thought she was talking about, really. On that, nobody picked it up. Anyway, the notion of attention is a main concern of hers throughout her life, and she writes about it. You find reference to attention throughout her career, really. As an example of how my research is a practice-based one, I will present a case study and explain how it brought about a clarification of some issues I dealt with in the program of research. This is the RF3. This will also provide a general introduction of the research, and in the end, I will quickly show two more case studies. So, in the program of research, I wrote that I would engage with the following claims by Weil: that attention reveals a gap between interpretation, that is, the existing for us, and what is the real. Second, that the value of any effort of attention is independent of its results. And thirdly, that attention can only be apprehended through direct experience. And I want to focus on the first of these claims. So the case study is residency that I did at the Center for Drawing in December 2007. And the purpose of the project was to engage with claim three, actually, that is, that attention can only be apprehended through direct experience, particularly with a particular fact that seems to follow from this this claim, and this is that attention is voluntary, and that nobody and nothing can compel one to be attentive. So there is the non-compelability of attention. But as I will show, the project also had a bearing on claim one. The product of the project was a performance within the setting of an installation. I'm just going to briefly describe the installation. So this is the project space. So on one wall, there were printouts of the first million digits of pi, and that took, actually I didn't manage to stick them all up because it took forever and I ran out of blue tack, which takes a lot of blue tack. Then there was also a post-it note on the same wall, which there it is. It's just read an infinite small portion of the digital pi. And on the opposite wall, there was a drawing in pencil of a circle with one of its diameters. And on the floor, there were red lines done with a marker, which marked the middle of the room. And then there would be one that marked the middle, the half of that middle, and so on until the space got too small to be drawn. And well, you can't really make out what that says, but anyway, on the half of the room, those that posted note that said move on Zeno. With regard to the performance, the text contained several things, but amongst which were several fictional dialogues, particularly one dialogue dealt with bare distinctions between spontaneous and voluntary attention. This is a distinction she makes in her early writings. Also with the circularity of her argument, at least as perceived it, and with the notion of the non-comparability of attention. In the dialogue, basically I envisaged, I imagined a man with a gun, which was forcing Bale to draw a perfect circle, and she would reply that she couldn't draw a perfect circle because there's no such a thing as a perfect circle, and he would get quite impatient and would say, well, draw the best you can do, and if I could compel you to do that, then you would have drawn, you would have exercised your attention in a compelled way, and she would reply, well, by definition, attention cannot be compelled, so they always win, basically, in this dialogue. Mm-hmm. That's the bottom line. I wanted it that way. That's too early. These reflections on the nature of perfect circle and attention led me to a rereading of Bale's essay, from which I extrapolated the claim that attention reveals a gap between interpretation that exists and for us and what is real, and also to a clarification of the notion of the real. In this essay, Bale makes the following analogy. She takes the changeless movement of a circle revolving upon its center to represent, as she puts it, divine life. This in her later writing, there's a lot of sort of religious terminology. And these are equated with the real, not so much considering it as a thing in itself, but simply failing to discern any need to dwell further on it. The rest of the analogy involves the projection of the diameter on a point moving back and forth along this circumference, and she said this is the representation of all becoming here below, and this I equated with the interpretation, that is, with what is real for us. And after this project, I realized that the term real needs to be qualified as not a thing in itself, that is, as the transcendental object of knowledge. This in turn clarified what kind of relation between epistemology and ontology, which I mentioned earlier, may be one which throws light on Bale's thought, namely an ontology grounded in epistemology, that is, a discourse on what is, which starts by asking what can be known. This way of looking at ontology through epistemology can be exemplified by analyzing a proposition which at first seems to deny the existence of a transcendental object of knowledge. And this proposition is the following. So, what mind cannot know does not exist. Now, I ask, what in this sentence stands for the transcendental object of knowledge? Because it is irreducible in signification, in the sense that the words mind cannot know does not exist are senseless. Anyone who disagrees with this could, presumably, answer the following question. What does what stand for in the proposition what mind cannot know that not exist? So that's that. Coming back to the claims that they make, claim one implies that searching for indications of attention in works of art by studying them we necessarily miss the point. Claim three implies that attention cannot be observed but only exercised. And this is why we have decided to pursue this as a practice-based research. It seems to be inherent in the claims they make. As I said, I will conclude by briefly talking about other case studies. This is an installation which is part of the exhibition Mindspace, which is currently on at the Ruskin Gallery in Cambridge. It comprises couples of drawings of the same subject, one being recent and the other going as far as 10 years ago. And what you see on the right, it's a copy of a 4-year-old drawing. My intention was not to show whether drawings, possibly the most recent ones, indicated a more attentive attitude. But in light of Bayes' claim to shift the emphasis from drawings as products to be evaluated to drawings as a matter for a reflection on how different drawing practices may allow the possibility for an attentive attitude. The last project.
So, whose are these drawings?
Mine.
They're all your drawings?
Yes.
Oh, sorry.
Yes, yes. Yeah, they span 10 years of drawing activities. So, yeah. And they're all dated, so, you know, the viewer would know which one is which, because they probably didn't know it from looking at them, sadly. The last project that I will talk about is a collaboration, which is an ongoing collaboration, and is slightly different from what it's now. It has changed slightly, but the general idea is still the same. So this is a collaboration that I'm doing with a painter called Epsilon Randall Short. And the way this part of the project works is that I start for her, and after each session I would make a copy of the painting. So these are, I'm going to show four sessions. So this is the first one. These are details of the drawings. The drawings are actually on A4 pages, and they're about that size. So they're quite small in the page. This is the second, this is the third, this is the fourth. What I wanted to do with this project was, firstly, to attend to the painting through drawing from observation. Secondly, to have a dialogue, not necessarily verbal, on whether attention is exercised differently in painting and in drawing. And thirdly, to construct an archaeology of my past practice with a view to understanding my present practice in light of the research. The collaboration with the Epsilon is particularly valuable with regard to this third aim, since she was my drawing tutor for 3 years, the A level, and many of my views on drawing owe much to her teaching. And this last point on archaeology of one's own practice seems to me important in relation to practice-based research, because one of the assumptions from which the value of practice-based research can be argued is the privileged access the artist has to his or her own artistic history. At least that seems to be the case for me. That seems to be an important aspect of it. But thank you.
Could you explain the last piece?
This? Yes, basically, it worked like this. I sat for this painter, so she made a portrait of me, and then I made a copy of the painting. I mean, since then...
When you say a copy, you mean this drawing? You made this
drawing? Yes, I mean a transcription of
the painting. Interpretation.
Yes, yes. So, yeah, I drew from the painting. Yeah, I said now it's slightly changed. We felt that it was very much skewed, in the sense, painting of me doing the drawing. So now what we're doing is we kept this part of it, so I still draw from the painting. But I also made I make a drawing of her afterwards, and she makes a painting transcription of the drawing. And it's helping things, because also there's a space of dialogue in between that before didn't happen. It was very much the painting, and then I would take the painting, and that was the end of it. Whereas it's much more, I mean, even verbal dialogue, I mean, it just helps a lot. That's what we are doing. Really.
So, where do you fit this into the theories you've been kind of talking about?
Sorry? As a whole, this doesn't come out so much from the presentation. I'm looking at this specific notion of attention in the works in writing of Simone Weil. So basically, there is a part of this research which is very text-based, in the sense that I'm going through the text quite systematically and trying to work out in the philosophical context what they meant by attention, and how this has a bearing on my drawing practice. So that was the start of it. But a huge chunk of it is really working out all sort of the notions, the philosophical notion with which perhaps I'm not that familiar, that I need to understand, because, you know, of course, as everybody, I started with reading Bale's perhaps more accessible work, especially in the arts, Gravity and Grace. You get a certain view of what attention is. It seemed to be that important to what I was doing 3 or 4 years ago. And so that's where it started from. Of course, once you start looking into it, you have different problems. You start realizing that perhaps, yes, that notion of attention seemed very important, but you feel like you misunderstood it, perhaps. So there is a constant reassessment. So I read the text, but also I draw and I realize, oh yes, it seems to be still relevant, and it feeds back in. So in that sense, it's, that's how really the cycle of practice and theory, say, works for me.
So this drawing, do I understand you, was made at the time that the painting that you showed was finished?
Yes.
The contemporary was.
Yes, it was made just after.
So putting that painting next to your drawing on the fall.
Yeah.
You can tell us something about the tension in relation to your drawings.
Yes.
I mean, you were not interested in the last one. Your attention wasn't focused on the texture of these different areas.
No.
That was focused on the figure that was in, on the realistic portrait.
Very much. In fact, the interesting was that, well, I don't have pictures of the other stages, but of course, because of the nature of the method, abstract users, at the beginning there were just patches of color, and what you get is a very different sort of drawing. And as soon as it was like a recognizable figure, my drawing became very different. It becomes about the figure as such. So yeah, I should say that this drawing, this project was presented in the same exhibition that Caroline mentioned, the Carter Gallery, and these drawings were displayed basically on the opposite wall from the painting, and there were also booklets with notes taken after each session, both by me and Epsiba, which were basically reflections on the process we were going through.
But it's not necessarily, you're trying to say that it's an objective process. It isn't necessarily. You could have arrived at this stage just within mind, saying, I'm now going to focus on the figure itself, because that's the sort of thing you want to make an interesting exhibition. It's not.
Did I say objective?
I'm saying that this attention, which here is concentrated on the figure, can be a voluntary act of yours.
Attention is not. I don't think they means attention in that sense. It's nothing to do with attention to particular perceptual data. That is not. It seems to be more. It's a more of a kind of a regulative notion, really. So it's not really. I mean, the example she gives of attention would be, she talks a lot about attention being kind of a state of waiting, and she has an example of, which I find particularly helpful to understand what she means, when, you know, you have a thought and you don't have your notebook with you, and then, you know, by the time you have the notebook you don't remember, and you know you have a thought, but you don't know what it is, and you kind of direct your attention to this void, which and just wait in a way. So it's not if I make a proposition and say I'm going to concentrate on the figure. I mean, I made a lot of decisions. For example, in the first one, I was trying consciously to reproduce the sort of mark making that I saw. I still produced because I was sitting for it, and I could see that wouldn't count as attention. That would be simply, I mean, not in the Bellian sense, at least of the term. It doesn't because then the whole issue of results, you know, it's independent of results. So you can, if you accept that, which is my premise, because that's what I'm dealing with, saying, well, yes, you decide to be attentive to X, and I can see that, it will prove nothing, in a way.
But I mean, I think sort of people, what John's saying, I mean, a very simple exercise is you would copy the painting upside down.
Yeah.
In the state of stages, you would have produced a very different drawing because you couldn't have seen the figure in it. And I can take what you're saying, I can understand that, but it seems a peculiar exercise to do if you're not going to make any distinctions at all and say, well, any kind of attention is as good as any other. Because
I didn't say that at all.
I misunderstood, I'm sorry.
I think it's fine, it's just that the word attention has got a very well-defined meaning in the psychological literature and all kinds of different areas. It means something quite precise.
I'm ruling that out. I'm not looking. That's the thing. It is not. I'm not looking. Yeah, I'm not looking at that at all.
No, that's fine.
Yeah,
that's fine.
I didn't make. Sorry, I should have. Yes, that's what, especially in this environment, I think. Yeah, I guess it makes sense. But no, it's. No.
May I just offer an observation, and it's something which is applied to my research recently. I'm interested in the term paying attention to, and I don't know if this relates to it, because I don't understand.
That uses it in the conventional.
Okay. I'd like you to tell us, actually, in a second, when I just said it, that the term implies paying attention to, that there is a spending of resource by the one who is doing that action, and that spending of that concentration of mind and vision is given to the subject by the one who does that action. So there's a kind of imbuing with interest onto the subject, whether it be an animate object or not. But it's like the attention you give to a performer who becomes empowered by that. So in some way, focusing attention or paying attention to something gives that something a sense of value. Could you explain what you were going to say? Could you tell us what? Because I don't actually know the definition. Please.
Well, it's rather many chapters that you do. Okay. But do you know the gorilla? There's a gorilla amongst us. It's a video which is shown to a lot of people.
Oh, right.
And it's two teams playing, a red team and a blue team playing basketball. And you're asking the viewer to direct his attention to the number of times that the ball is made to bounce for the red team or the blue team.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the definition of attention. Attention is focused on that.
Yes. Okay.
And meanwhile, through that, you know, so at the end of the thing, the experimenter asks, have you observed anything unusual?
Yes.
And they said, no, there's nothing at all.
No.
Well, there was a man dressed as a gorilla walking across, and you replay the video, and it's absolutely perfectly visible.
Yes.
But attention was not directed towards that.
Yeah. That's the
classical way of defining attention.
Yeah, because I think she's quite, there is really the contrary of that. Because, in fact, she says, you know, as soon as you mention one of the lectures, she talks more about it. As soon as you mention attention, people will start frowning and, you know, looking for something. And she said, well, attention is the contrary of that.
Okay.
So, in that sense, right, first of all, she's not in that line, really, of thought. And I think it needs to be made.
What language was she writing?
French, yeah.
And it has to be taken into account as well.
Yes, in fact, she really connects it to attention and attend, so to attend, so to wait for, and also to wait on, in a way. It can also be understood like that. So that's the
responding to attention.
Yes, but in a kind of relaxed way. You know, and it is a sort of a watchful waiting. That's what that's.
There's a surrealist term, le hasard objectif, where with Breton and others, written novels.
around.
As a
preferred as a
like a chance.
Yes, but the objective. So a person is actually walking through whatever it is, life or the street or whatever it is, with a completely open mind,
yes.
completely receptive to it, and can start noticing things because of that
yes.
state of mind.
That would be closer, I think, to what she means. But there is a bit of ambivalence in some. Yeah.
And isn't there, by Simone Weil's definition of attention, she would notice the man dressed as a gorilla walking past because she would have been told to look at the balls and her mind would have said, oh, no. And then she would notice this strange thing. If you follow exactly how you define attention,
that's dependent on results.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, I think.
Dependent upon results.
I mean,
that's the thing about the balls, isn't it? Because it's information that there is something accumulative there, that where you said the value of attention is independent of the results.
Yes.
The balls, or the not noticing the gorilla, is in fact the result.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And so if it's, this I find very interesting, this idea in relation to what James picked up, that's an issue of what are we looking at? How do we know the intentions of the artist and the ideas in there? And what I found very intriguing about this presentation was to see the drawings that you had done, that you showed one, two, three, four, and you showed painting, and then you went back, and then you did this, and then you did that. And what was actually happening, I was collecting together the information about the painting and then its representation or transcription in a completely different way, which I found much more engaging rather than that correspondence of information, which immediately sets up a testing ground for how much I notice, which isn't what we want.
No, it doesn't bring an issue at all.
And because of that, I've been sitting here thinking, oh, this is much more successful than work than you showed me. Because it's actually engaging me. And I wonder whether this notion of the independence of the results can also be the independence of the material entity, that one might be talking about cheese, but actually tasting lettuce. That somehow the correspondence of actualities isn't necessary, and you can do it in another way.
Yes.
Would that come into your third reference?
Can you think about it?
Okay. But you know, almost kind of seeing the two pieces next to each other, you know, the piece with the numbers and the circle. Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Next to this rock. How do you bring them together? With the attention.
Well,
is it not the other? It's almost like consciousness studies. Is it like you're?
I mean, first of all, I think in a way, the issue of bringing together, in a way, I feel, I suppose it seems to be more a matter of classification, because if somebody does drawing with pencil only, and draws only apples and pears, somebody could say, well, how do you bring them together? If you decide that that's where the difference lies on whether one is an artist that draws pears or that draws apples. And so in that sense, here it seems a bit the same. I don't see there are all projects that engage in different ways with the notion of attention. I mean, the residency and that project, in a way, was a more sort of explicit. I mean, that, you know, it was a text which I read, and there was an installation, and it engaged very much in a sort of very performative lecture. And so I used the convention of performance and of installation to say something. So art used in that way, but it, you know, the text itself could have been presented as an essay. So in that sense, but then there's also drawing from observation, which seems which clarify another
thing.
Yeah.
Are you interested in this drawing as a piece of art?
No, not really.
Yeah.
God, no. I mean, that's right.
The
art, you know, like,
I'm coming over
there. No, but it's
are you interested? Okay, I'll take I'll follow up that. We're being devil's advocate here. Are you interested in the project that you did with Hepzibah as art? That is in the context of a certain sort of discursive.
Yeah, yeah. I think I'm interested in. I think that. As art, in as far as that, you know, the fact that it's read as an art product, you know, informs the way, the way I try to direct the reading of it, and you know, and the fact that it is presented in a gallery, you know, and it's viewed as an artwork, then you need to think how that, you know, it's part of its meaning. So insofar as its reading and the, my leaning to that power over how I can direct the viewer, I'm interested in that, yes.
Are you equally amenable to the idea that it would just be seen purely as something like consciousness, I guess? So the idea that it ought to be seen as art and only as, or you're quite happy for it to be seen in
it? Yeah, well, I'm quite happy of it as I'm not aware of anything that is outside my control, I suppose. Yes, you know, because I mean, I can put a big sticker and say, don't do it, but you know, it doesn't seem, yeah, I don't see the two things being problematic. They can go together. It's just, it doesn't seem, I mean, this idea of not having to do with the results, I should just add that it seems to be. Because we see the results at the end, but they seem to say, well, it's the attitude of mind of not caring about results that will bring that sort of attention. So, you know, she talks about solving a geometrical problem. It's a very specific task, you could say. So the issue of kind of, you know, the what you mentioned of, you know, walking on the street and opening up necessarily wouldn't be what she means, but she simply say, well, if you start by thinking that what you do will have results that are important, then you surely won't be exercising the sort of higher level of attention of which I'm talking about. So it's almost at the basis of it, rather than say, well, results, I don't care about it. It's more like before you set out, you're in a criminal mind where results are not going to be what is valuable in the end, basically.
But it's highly dependent on the viewer. Because if you present any one of these installations in Campbell or in Goose or in Green or in the Tate Gallery, you're going to, or here on Stans, you're going to have a completely different interest.
Of course, yes. Yeah.
So it's, I mean, what Simone Miles says about that. Understand yourself. It's not a unique response that you're
getting. No.
Attention means whatever.
Many things.
To what
it and I will need to distinguish it from you know, the probably that first chapter saying what is not.
Yeah.
Because of course it's she uses it in a very specific way and in a way that is counter what one finds in a lot of literature, really. So, yeah,
can I make a simple observation about that drawing, Gaston? But I was wondering, well, it's an observation, not a question, really, but it's interesting you're talking about you're sticking to your defence seems to be that this is a historical study of this author, so you're not interested in more updated ideas of consciousness or attention.
Mm-hmm.
And equally in this drawing, you've drawn a nice line around the image, and it's actually done in a kind of very nostalgic, centred to the 50s kind of style, which is, it's like, from what I hear, you don't want to take on some ideas where you say, well, that's not what Simondale was interested in. So you're actually excluding quite a lot of debate and questions, but at the same time you're not saying this is purely a historical study investigation of what Simondale. So this is, I feel a bit uneasy. There's not, you're sort of in between it being a kind of philosophical history of ideas study and something else. And I find I'm a little confused in that.
Well, I mean, to be perfectly honest with you, the amount of research that is needed on the purely philosophical side just rules out anything else. I just have to draw the line there. I will not be able to look at it in any other way. There's plenty for me to do that. That's the way it is.
But then it becomes history of ideas, isn't it?
Why? I think
the problematics really do come when you separate the philosophical ideas from the activity of what we can say the context of arts. Because if you do that, then and this is where I fundamentally disagree with you on your statement that with the installation, you could have it just as a lecture. I really think that it's decapitated. These two things exist in the same framework.
Yes.
And I don't think
no.
it's speculative.
It was just to create the image of something that could
yes.
be read as a
yes.
text.
It
which,
could be, without
which
doubt.
Which is, you know,
I think the words and the sight and everything, you know, each piece of paper is as important as each word. It is
yes.
the material of the piece. And this is what I think is very, very important. Because then you don't get involved in issues like, oh, well, this only has to be this, or we can look at this drawing in a particular way. I think we have to be very, very careful not to slip into the notion of the stylistic appraisal, which, you know, when you were asked about this, you said, no, wouldn't figure a little bad art, meaning it's a bad drawing. Because that's not, whether it's a good or a bad drawing is not the point. It is, again, the material of the piece. It's part of the material. I think what you can ask is the manner of this going to lead the viewer in the way that the viewer to go? Or is the manner of it going to set up certain sorts of questions that in fact create the wrong sort of tension? And I think you can ask that, and this is why seeing it flip from one to the other and back again, the issue of the style of the ball was not important. It was merely part of a way of engaging. And I think that's important. You could have done this in steel if that had done it. Or you could have done it virtually if that had done it. You know, and I think this is what's very important. Then you don't get this split. So I think what happens is that the philosophical material is as pertinent as a piece of paper.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Thank you.